I know sometimes we feel like that our one voice doesn't count for much, and sometimes we're probably tempted not to go and vote because we think, how important is it really for me to cast my vote amidst this sea of people, or how valuable is my effort when there are so many out there that may be moving in the opposite direction. So tonight I want us to see the value of one individual. And I want to go back to the story of Esther, and if you'll open your Bibles again to Esther chapter 4. Hitler was not the first person who came up with a scheme to wipe out the Jews. There was a man in ancient Babylon by the name of Haman, and he was opposed to the Jews. He was anti-Semitic in his feelings. He had hatched an elaborate plot to eradicate the Jews from the city of Babylon, from that whole region of the country. And Esther was among those. She and her close relative Mordecai were among those who had been taken to Babylon as part of the captivity from Jerusalem. And during the course of events, she had come to the attention, because of her beauty, of the royal palace. The queen had fallen out of favor, and the king ran a beauty contest to see who the replacement would be for the queen who had embarrassed him publicly. And so he, out with the old, in with the new, and Esther was to be the new queen. She was a beautiful young lady, but she was a Jewess. And so she came to the palace, and this wicked man Haman had worked out this plot, had convinced the king to sign the death sentence for all the Jews in the kingdom. And Mordecai had heard about this. He had appealed to Esther. He said, "You're the only one who's in a position to go to the king and try to change all this. Otherwise, all the Jews in the kingdom will be exterminated." Now, here we read in chapter 4, verses 9 and following, that a man named Hathach went back and reported to Esther all these things that Mordecai had said. And then she instructed him to carry this message back to Mordecai: "All the king's officials and the people of the royal provinces know that for any man or woman who approaches the king in the inner court without being summoned, the king has but one law, that he be put to death. The only exception to this is for the king to extend the golden scepter to him and spare his life. But 30 days have passed since I was called to go in to the king." She, in essence, is saying to Mordecai, if I go in and try to make an appeal to him, I'll go in without him summoning me. I haven't even talked to the king in this lengthy period of time. And if I go in, I will be risking my life, because the law says for anyone to interrupt the king, that's an automatic death sentence, unless he extends the golden scepter and spares the life of that individual. Well, it's here that the turning point speech is made by Mordecai, the passage that Craig read for us just a moment ago. And so Mordecai sends word back to Esther, and he says, "Yes, I know that your life is going to be at risk if you go into the presence of the king without being summoned." But he said, "If you don't do this, our nation will be lost." He says in verse 12, it says, "Then Esther's words were reported to Mordecai, and he sent back this answer: Do not think that because you are in the king's house, you alone of all the Jews will escape. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, but you and your father's family will perish. And who knows but that you have come to royal position for such a time as this." Soul-stirring words, a famous reply, a call to arms. Stand up. Do what's right. You know, Winston Churchill made one of those turning point speeches to the British people during the darkest days of the Second World War. This is what he said: "Let us brace ourselves to our duties, and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its Commonwealth last for 1,000 years, men will say, this was their finest hour." in the English populace rose to the occasion. And they maintained that stiff upper lip through those darkest days. And they fought back and they held on and maintained and won the victory. Now, there's no indication that Esther ever even hesitated when her duty was spelled out in those terms. She understood what was at stake. She was willing to risk her life, and she did. And so in verses 15 and following, it says, "Then Esther sent this reply to Mordecai, 'Go gather together all the Jews who are in Susa and fast for me. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my maids will fast as you do. And when this is done, I will go to the king, even though it is against the law. And if I perish, I perish.'" You know, throughout history, marvelous things have happened when God's people were willing to stand in the gap. Noah stood in the gap, and he raised God-fearing children, even though the entire world was disbelieving. And the world's population carried on through the saving events of the flood and the ark that carried them to safety. David stood in the gap when he alone was willing to go down into that valley and face the giant Goliath. And tonight, I hope we can distill some truths from this courageous story of Esther that will help us at least be willing, if called upon by God, to stand in the gap. Very often, all it takes is one courageous person to turn the tide and to make a significant difference in history. First of all, though, before anyone will ever have the courage to stand in the gap, that individual must believe that one person can really make a difference. In our overpopulated world, it's easy to underestimate the value of one courageous voice in the wilderness. It's easy to underestimate the value of a single vote or one person who is willing to stand for his or her convictions. But did you know that back in 1868, one vote saved President Andrew Johnson from impeachment? Just one vote. In the Electoral College in 1876, Rutherford B. Hayes won the presidency by a single vote. Only time it's ever happened. In 1845, one vote allowed Texas to become part of the Union. Bless that man's heart that voted yes for Texas. In 1923, it was one vote that gave Adolf Hitler control of the Nazi Party. One vote. One voice has at times made a huge difference in the course of world history. It's interesting because the prophet Jeremiah in Jeremiah chapter 5 and verse 1 spoke to the people of the land and pronounced God's judgment on Jerusalem. And this is what God said to Jeremiah. He said, "Roam to and fro through the streets of Jerusalem and look now and take note. And seek in her open squares, if you can find a man, if there is one who does justice, one who seeks truth, then I will pardon her." And that one could not be found. And so judgment came. The Babylonians carried them off. And thus, the Jewish people are in this dilemma that Esther is trying to rescue them from. We've all heard the story, and you've maybe got it on a email on the internet, about the man who was out throwing the starfish back in the sea. They'd all been beached. And someone said, "You can't possibly save all the starfish. There are millions of them out here on the beach." He said, "No, but I can make a difference for this one." And he tossed him back out there. You know, you can help one. You can help a few. You can't save everyone. You can't do it all, but you can make a difference. As Christians, we sometimes forget that one man or one woman standing with God makes a majority. Now there's a second truth in all this. God can use you in ways that He is not planning, at the time at least, to use anyone else. He singles people out at times for special jobs and uses. Esther just happened to be at the right place at the right time. And I believe it was providential that she was where she was at that time. There weren't any other Jews who had the position of influence that that lady had at that hour of time. And every one of us here tonight is unique. There's only one of each of us. We're the only ones, each of us individually, who have our convictions and our makeup and our skills and our touch and our sphere of influence. You're the only one here who knows certain people. Nobody else here may know those individuals. There are people and situations that you are in the best position of all in which to make a difference. So there are times when God uses us in a special way like this. Thirdly, God's jobs will get done whether we make ourselves available for Him or not. Esther didn't have to say yes, and she could have said no, but Mordecai reminded her that God's will be accomplished whether any individual is willing to be used by God or not. Notice again what he said there in verse 14. He reminded her, if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, but you and your father's family will perish. She could have kept her mouth closed. She could have protected her own neck. But it was God's will. God had promised the people that they would return from captivity. God's will was not that they go off and all perish there in Babylon. And so Mordecai says, if you're willing to be used by God, God will use you. But if you're not, God will find someone else who will be used. And it's the same for us today. God isn't frustrated. God is not restrained in His will. If you or I fail to step up and speak up and stand in the gap, God can raise someone up who will stand up and speak up and stand in the gap. You know, the tragedy is that when we fail to take a stand for God, we are the ones who lose. God's will always be accomplished. And there's another truth in all this. You may never even know the difference that you have made in the times that you have been willing to stand in the gap. With Esther, the difference she made for her people was dramatic, and it was highly visible, and she knew because the king changed everything. Haman was eventually hanged on the very gallows he was going to use. Everything was changed. The Jewish nation was delivered from that sentence of death, and Esther was able to rejoice seeing that God had used her in a powerful way. But even Esther didn't realize, you know, all that was good that would follow. You know, Ruth was another one who stood in the gap. Remember Ruth? And she came back and stayed with her mother-in-law. She married Boaz. She was faithful to God. And she didn't realize that little baby named Obed would have a child named Jesse, who would have a child named David, who would become the king of Israel. And through that same line of descent would come the Savior of the world. Now, she never lived to see all that. She stood in the gap, but she never knew what was to follow. And I know that there are people who are standing in the gap today spiritually here, both men and women, because their mate won't stand in the gap. And there are especially, I know, wives that this seems to be more common with, who will get the kids up and get them to church and who will try to provide for spiritual education in the home, and they don't always have a partner who pitches in and helps with them. And that's standing in the gap. You never know what kind of eternal consequences are going to happen when you take on that hard role and carry out your responsibilities. Where would Timothy have been had it not been for a faithful grandmother and a faithful mother? You know, we don't have the privilege in this life of getting to do what Jimmy Stewart did in The Wonderful Life. We can't be taken around to see the difference it would make if we had never been born. But I'm convinced that there are those right here tonight that if you had not been born and if you had not lived the life and if you had not carried out the convictions that you've carried out as Christians, that this world would be a very different place. Your family would be a very different place. You know, we have God's promise that a life that is lived for Him standing in the gap will not be fruitless. In 1 Corinthians 15:58, Paul wrote, "Therefore, my dear brothers, stand firm. Let nothing move you. Always give yourselves fully to the work of the Lord, because you know that your labor in the Lord is not in vain." And then lastly, you know, it really never ultimately hurts us to take a stand, even if there is risk involved in that. Esther had resolved herself. She knew the danger. She said, "If I perish, I perish." Well, she went into the king, and you know how the story ends. That king extended the golden scepter, sparing her life. She went in and she talked about the dilemma that was facing the Jews. That king, he couldn't change the law because the law was unchangeable, but he gave the Jews permission to fight and to deal with their enemies in an effective way, and things all changed and their lives were all spared. But you know, she could have been killed. And I'm sure when she stepped in there, she didn't know what the outcome would be. And suppose the worst had happened. And suppose he had been in a bad mood that day, and he was angry, and he didn't want to see her, and she walked in, and he said, "Off with her head." He had already gotten rid of the first queen, and that could have happened. And had it happened, guess where Esther would have been? With the Lord. You see, you can't ultimately destroy or punish or ruin a follower of God. In the end, we're all right with God. We are rarely faced, though, with such dramatic and life-threatening stands as the one that Esther had to make. At worst, most of us risk censure or ridicule if we take a stand for something. You know, some of you have learned that you can go through hard times and there's even value in doing that. We've got several folks in this congregation who have vivid memories of the Great Depression. Now, we've had a mild depression recently, but some can remember when it was just beans and cornbread, and when families had to put their cars up on blocks, and when times were genuinely hard. And yet, I hear people talk about those days, and they talk about them with fondness, and talk about the families that drew together and had closeness, and how families shared and they exchanged coupons during the war. And during those hard times, they did what they had to do to get by. And good things can come out of hard times. You know, Joshua was willing to stand in the gap with his family, and he made that famous statement, "As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." You know, we need fathers and we need husbands who are willing to stand in the gap in our ungodly culture today. 2,000 years ago, Jesus Christ entered our world for one purpose, and that one purpose was to stand in a gap. And it was a gap that existed between a holy God and a sinful mankind. And Jesus came with the very same attitude. "If I perish, I perish." In fact, the way he put it was, "Not my will, but thine be done." And it cost him his life. But look at the difference that one solitary life has made in our world. Because Jesus was willing to take a stand, even to the point of death, he expects us as his followers to take the same kind of stand. He said, "If you're ashamed of me, I'll be ashamed of you before my Father. If you'll confess me, I'll confess you before my Father." I just hope that if we ever find ourselves in a situation even remotely similar to the dramatic situation that Esther found herself in, I hope that we'll all have the courage of our convictions, and that if called upon, we'll stand in the gap and we'll be used by God for his purposes. I'm grateful for examples like her, and I'm grateful to know that one person can and has made a difference in history. I hope we'll all be that kind of person. If tonight you're not a follower of Jesus Christ, if you've never made that commitment, we would encourage you to take that stand tonight to stand for your convictions. And if you need to confess him here publicly before this group, the fact that you believe that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, and go through these waters of baptism, we would encourage you strongly to do that if you've not done it. If you're here tonight and you need the prayers of God's people, let us know that, because we would love to pray for whatever need you have. If you need to come, we invite you to come as we stand and sing.